The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Four Center podcast feed. I'm Boba Ken Knapsack.
And I am the son of I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And we're here for a news and cues, and Joseph, holy moly, Lucasfilm, finally, the last couple weeks, they've been helping us out with the news cycle, yeah?
Yeah, this was so great. We often, to the point where many listeners and fans joke with us about it, we often finish recording on Monday, we release our episode on Tuesday, and either late Monday or early Tuesday will become huge Star Wars news. But this was great. I think you and I both had a similar experience. Maybe there could be cutscenes like a romantic comedy. We both rolled over in bed. And our phones let us know that the trailer for the Book of Boba Fett had bursted out of the proverbial Sarlacc just in time for us to just go crazy about it today.
Absolutely. It was a good morning, a Star Wars surprise. And yes, I know there had been some rumors going on. I'll be honest, I don't listen to trailer rumors at all anymore. Don't care. Give me an official word so I can maybe schedule my life. So this was a very fun surprise just popping up in the morning.
Absolutely.
We're going to dive into that real quick. But before we do that, we always like to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. So check that out. A little bit later, we have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But Joseph, that is not all.
Oh, no. We also have an offer from Insight Editions. They're a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books and other pop culture books, too. They are offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insighteditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are continuing to recommend the Insight Editions book, Secrets of the Sith. It's a particularly fun book during spooky times, sadly. Spooky times officially just ended, it being November 1st, but you can still dive into the Sith and all their secrets and the mean things that Sheev Palpatine has to say. If you want to do that, you can use this link, insighteditions.com/discount/FC35.
Check it out. Check it out. We're going to get the news real quick here. We always, if you're kind of just popping through here, Force Center, maybe don't listen regularly. We do love our life for Star Wars adventures. Part of the Star Wars adventure is getting this news this morning, which is always fun. Did you have anything, Joseph? Because I'll start with mine real quick. Halloween. I was at a little Halloween birthday party, front patio get together, and a bunch of friends were handing out candy to kids in a very crowded neighborhood. It's called the Toluca Lake area of L.A., and they like literally bust people in. And I got to tell you something, a little disappointed. Not a lot of Star Wars. Not a lot of Star Wars.
Really?
Kids, I need some more Star Wars costumes. Let's work out. 2022 going to be a big year for Star Wars TV. I predict next Halloween, a lot of Kenobis, a lot of Andors, maybe some Fets. I think they're resurging Star Wars costumes.
A sea of Kenobis. I want to see lots of fake beards on kids.
So that was my Star Wars adventure. That's it. What about you, sir?
So your Star Wars adventure was just disappointment.
It was disappointment. We always want to celebrate, but I got to be honest. After a while, I kept thinking about it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great costumes and you know, a lot of the pop culture meme-based, a lot of Squid Games, a lot of that kind of stuff. I get it. Star Wars has been a little quiet the last few months. Totally get it. And I'm like, this is not the year of Grogu costumes. In the back of my head, you know, I'm sitting there with a rebel hat on, handing out candy, and, I want to see Star Wars represented. I'm sure there were. I just missed some of them. But, I got to face the facts sometimes. A little disappointed. I want a resurgence in, you know, like you said, kids and Kenobi beards.
Well, look, I think I can help you because my Star Wars adventure was seeing some stuff that I was very excited about for Halloween. I love Halloween. As you know, my wife and I took a walk in our neighborhood, and it a row of we had been seeing people put up the decorations, and a lot of skeletons kind of coming half out of lawns. A lot of big displays going up, all sorts of cool things. We knew that's the street to go hit if we wanted to just kind of see people out and about enjoying Halloween. Waved hello to a lot of adults and happy Halloween. And then there were the kids started to come out. We got out at the right time. And I saw a lot of, you know, expected things like you're saying, no Squid Game, but I saw Super Mario, I saw a firefighter, the princess, like all sorts of standard things. And then I was like you, I was like, is there going to be some Star Wars? And then we kind of rounded the corner and I saw the glow of a yellow lightsaber. I thought, this is great. Got closer. It was a girl in kind of standard Jedi robes, not specifically Rey, just kind of traditional Jedi robes, but with a yellow lightsaber. And I thought, that's cool. That's great. And then, Ken, my mind was blown because the child next to her was dressed as Orson Krennic. Very specifically, not just like random rebel, like the white cape and everything. He was Orson Krennic. And I did a literal double take and I almost stopped and said, are you Orson Krennic? But you know, you have that, like, should I speak to this child that I don't know?
Right.
Kind of hesitancy. And it was like a whole big group of people and, you know, parents and kids discussing where they should go. And I didn't want to say, I understand you as a family are talking, but I need to engage with this child about Star Wars. So I almost turned around and asked, you are Orson Krennic, right? But then there's that little part of me that, like, would the kid go like, oh, I just thought this was a generic Imperial outfit. Right. And then would I be disappointed? But anyway, I ultimately saw two Jedi and one Orson Krennic, so there was some Star Wars Halloween representation here in the neighborhood of Hollywood.
I absolutely love that, because, yeah, you're right. In terms of Imperial outfits, it's a pretty good-looking outfit there. We can agree on that. But, yeah, I would have turned around and yelled, you have made time an ally of the rebellion. See what his eight-year-old thinks there. That's
yeah. Awesome. I mean, awesome. I did think Krennic's famous quote, oh, it's beautiful.
I'd love it. My pal Kate Mulligan, I think you know Kate too, Joseph Schmoda and everything, a great comic, and she has two young boys, big Star Wars fans, and one of them wanted to dress up as BB-9E. And wouldn't you know it, there is a BB-9E costume. So Kate helped make her a kid's dream come true. It was a great photo she put out on Instagram. And she just was like, yeah, there it is. And she was telling me last week, she was like, I mean, he's a Star Wars fan. He wanted to be the evil droid.
There you go. I can see how kids would relate to BB-9E. I want to be the one who's always watching and catches people.
Well, speaking of catching, as in catching us off guard, hey, we got some Star Wars news, and Joseph, here is the big lead. Boba and Fennec walk into a palace. That's how the joke begins. The Star Wars teaser trailer for Book of Boba Fett dropped this morning as of our recording day here. We're going to get this episode out a little earlier. Surprise to all of you as well. Now, like I said up top, Joseph, there were some little rumors popping around. I don't mean this to be snarky. I just don't pay attention to the trailer rumors until maybe something is official. So I wasn't expecting this at all. I hadn't really paid attention. Were you tracking any of those rumors at all?
No, honestly, that Disney Plus day is coming relatively soon on November 12th. And I think there's probably going to be more revealed there, but I was kind of expecting a trailer on that day.
Yeah, same. And I know we got that behind the scenes legacy Boba Fett thing coming our way as well, which is going to be great. But yeah, and so it was a pleasant surprise. So I almost recommend all of you just turn off your news rumor notifications and be surprised as you press your snooze button and then look and realize you got Star Wars. All right, let's dive into this teaser trailer. And we got the key art there. Nice, cool poster. First reactions, Joseph, what are you thinking? Where are you at? What did you?
Yeah, no, I just loved it. I've been very excited for the return of Boba Fett, for the possibility of it just by the existence of the show The Mandalorian. And then the revelation of the character in season two was kind of exactly what I wanted. It was this sort of brutal, minimal character that people imagined back in the 80s, if you're an original trilogy fan, mixed with all of these identity issues from the Boba Fett that emerged in the prequel era, of him being so many different things, of a bounty hunter, a Mando by creed, a clone, an orphan, all these different things. And in the season two of Mandalorian just kind of starts playing with that. So I'm already excited for whatever they're going to do next with the character to explore these issues. And to me, this trailer just zeroed in on exactly what I'm excited about for Boba Fett as a character and sort of aesthetically. Like, my overall reaction to the trailer is like, did Boba Fett himself cut this trailer? Because it is minimal and direct. It is about mood and kind of this just one thematic idea of, well, Boba Fett wants to be boss, and he's got some ideas about how he's going to be a boss. Is it going to work? It's just so punchy and direct, including some literal strikes with a stick from Boba Fett. So I could go on and on, which I probably will, but that's my overall reaction, that it's minimal, impactful, and has this very clear big picture idea of this is further exploration of who is Boba Fett.
I think you're right to talk about that vibe and mood and how it does kind of track with Boba Fett, the character, particularly the man in that mask where we've never been too familiar with, but you mentioned the great prequel stuff, which helped expand that character. This moved with the slow intensity of Fett loading Solo into Slave One at the end of Empire. Like, it had that kind of vibe as well, and Fett's definitely a mood. My reactions, other than just the wonderful surprise, which again, I keep harping on that, but it kind of worked. It kind of got me going like, oh, I wasn't expecting this, which is kind of my thematic approach to this entire show. I wasn't expecting this show. Fett's never moved the needle super, for me over the years. Yet here I am with almost no expectations other than, hey, it's Star Wars. You give me a Ben Quadranero series I'm watching and I'm going to be happy. And that almost helped fuel a little bit more excitement than I would even think, where I've been excited for the show for a while, probably because of what they did with Fett in Mando season 2. I really with you on that. Love what they were doing with him. So therefore it all kind of swirled like a nice ice cream cone, chocolate and vanilla, all swirling into this, like, I don't know what to expect. I'm not super, waiting for this show compared to Kenobi and Andor, but man, I can't wait to sit down and just discover the show as it unfolds in front of me. So I'm in a different position than I've been in probably a few years as a Star Wars fan. We're usually, I'm clued in and, getting ready and excited and have daydreams about this, what this might be. I haven't been dwelling on this show, so I kind of like where I am on it, where here I am, Fett, Fennec Shand, let's do it. I'm going to find out with all of you. And I just kind of, that's where I am initially.
Okay. That makes a ton of sense. So I know you enjoyed, I know you've never had, you didn't grow up with Boba Fett fever.
I did not.
But then you did really enjoy him in Mandalorian season 2. And now that is rolling over into like, yeah, I'm intrigued. I want more of that. give me your brochure, Boba Fett. I'm interested in your ideas.
I am interested in a timeshare. And the trailer struck a similar vibe to some of the stuff in Mando season 2, which if I'm going to say anything negative, and it's not really negative with a capital N there. It's just like, okay, familiar vibe to some of the stuff, even the Fett stuff we saw in Mando 2. So it does feel like Mando, 0.2, 0.3 or something like that. And I don't mean that as a big negative or an insult, but as I was watching, I was like, okay, yeah, got it. This is kind of the world we've been living in. Post Jedi bounty hunter underworld type of vibe with Mando. So that's kind of where I went with the two as well. But there's just some things, some great shots, some great things, and we're going to talk about that just it got me excited again. So yeah, you're right. No fever, but maybe.
Yeah, definitely. There's a ton of great moments. There's definitely an element of nostalgia for sure, for people who have lived with Star Wars for different lengths of time. There's still an element of nostalgia if you've been a fan for 2 months and Return of the Jedi is your favorite, even more for people who grew up in this very specific world. So I do agree with you that there's lots of vibes that feel similar to The Mandalorian, but that was the last thing on my mind the three times in a row I watched this trailer right away. Because for me, there's this key difference about the idea of leadership, right? Mm-hmm. Definitely in The Mandalorian with Din Djarin, he's a simple man trying to make his way in the universe like Boba. He's definitely wrestling with this Mando idea and a creed. And so I can see that people would kind of gravitate toward the creed idea that's in this trailer. But for me, it's so different because Din just wants to get by. And then once he has an assignment with Grogu, he just wants to complete that. And we're even leaving Mandalorian off of Din's now got some potential responsibility with the Darksaber that he doesn't want. This to me is just like flipped utterly on its head. This is about who Boba Fett wants to be, not just as a person, But as a leader, I mean, I feel like this trailer is, what if Vito Corleone personally put on armor and kicked people's ass with a stick?
Right.
It's that's a really different perspective than somebody who shuns leadership the way Din does.
Yeah. And that's in the end, and we're going to talk about some of the big theme stuff there. That's what pulled me in and has got me more than intrigued coming forward is they answering the question a little bit of like Boba Fett, where we left off, where he, you know, kills Bib Fortuna and throws him off and takes the throne there. Exactly. Where that code that kind of emerged and was established in Mando season two, at least for my money, of I'm a good guy, still a bad guy, still like violence, but I got some codes that I live by. and rolling that out and him basically, you know, like I said, we're going to dive into it, but like, hey, Jabba ruled out of fear. Come offer it a little respect. What do you think about that? You want to work with me? And there you go. Right then, I was pulled in because that's going to be a little bit different indeed. So let's talk about some of these favorite moments, Joseph. Here, a little checklist of cool moments. What do you got?
Yeah, I think the wild-eyed Boba swinging the vibroblade. That was one of the more powerful moments of all of Mandalorian season two for me is that look on his face, on Boba Fett's face, on the actor Temuera Morrison's face when he was just letting the anger out, you know, fighting with that passion. And to see that shot again, like, you know, there's a lot of this where the trailer where he's trying to play it cool or he's trying to say like, look, why do we need conflict? Oh, you gave me conflict.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give it back. And when I do, it's hard for me to keep my eyes inside my skull while I bash you. It gives it this like energy and this real threat of like, if he's trying not to be that person.
Yeah.
If that's his last resort, it's so great to see how ferocious it is when he does go to that resort, as it were.
Yeah. That's some great stuff there. Completely filling the continuing the void from that episode, continuing the void. My head swirling with all this Boba Fett excitement, continuing the mood that was set and the vibe from that Robert Rodriguez directed episode of just like, I like hitting things. Chance.
Yeah, and this is just total headcanon for me. Maybe the show will delve into it at some point. The way they're delving into Boba Fett's character, I like the headcanon that every time he kills someone, for whatever reason, he is imagining he is killing Mace Windu, which he never got to do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I would love, I'm jumping around. I would love a moment where he's just staring off into the Tatooine sunset, the twin sunset there, just the binary sunset, thinking, I never got my mace.
I never got my mace. Yeah. So that was a big one for me. Another big one, it's not that flashy of a shot, but it excited me of what it could portend. The shot of the Tusken Raiders really got me intrigued because so much of this trailer is about this, hey, I'm rebuilding Jabba's empire, but trying to do it my way. But I'm so intrigued by, we pick him up in Mandalorian season two with the cycler rifle and the gaffy stick. And there, that big question to me of like, okay, well, it seemed like he was able to subsist on Tatooine. But that was that out of aid from the Tusken Raiders, mercy, or does he have an antagonistic relationship and he took something from them? And just seeing them in the trailer makes me feel like, not only are they in the trailer because they are a part of the reality of Tatooine, a part of the power dynamic of Tatooine, but that means to me, I'm hoping that we're going to get a little bit more insight into Boba Fett's relationship with them.
Yeah, I put that down as the shot of the trailer.
Wow.
Absolutely love that shot because it just the way it looks, the way it feels, growing up the Tusken Raiders and kind of the view of them back then compared to what Mando has helped us kind of see them as now, and wanting to explore a little bit more of that and to wrap it up with Fett, like the relationship with Fett. These aren't Tusken Raiders just roaming. These aren't them finding some 2-bit wannabe bounty hunter with Din Djarin over their shoulder. Like, this is to me, the Tusken Raiders, Boba Fett. I got Kenner action figures on my living room floor, and we're going to play something out that I've never really, you know, experienced. And I it just looked really cool. And we know really cool goes a long way in Star Wars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think for me, the really cool, a couple other shots, that cityscape that is half in a crater and then still surrounding up. That is just one of those, to me, sort of peak Star Wars. I always think in whatever behind the scenes vignette that I think they probably released online in 2004, 2005 before Revenge of the Sith, where Lucas himself is talking about the design of the sinkhole cities of Utapau and how much he loves designing planets to be like, well, how would you make whatever environment work? And how would, you know, the anthropology of how would living in this space affect the people who live there? And I don't know if that's a Tatooine city or not. I don't think there's full confirmation. It looks like a Tatooine city. So there's the just like, damn, that looks amazingly cool, amazingly Star Wars. But it also got me excited of like, is this a, you know, a new city on Tatooine that we haven't been to?
Yeah, right there with you. Number one, it reminded me of some of the initial shots of Jeddah in the Rogue One teaser trailer days, which were, it's that same good Star Wars vibe. Yeah, it's a great design. I know we've been asking that question. Will Kenobi leave Tatooine? Now the question is, does Fett leave at all? And that kind of almost doesn't make sense. Like he's trying to establish this. And so I'm excited to maybe take in a new Mos Blank.
Hopefully it won't just be called Mos Blank, but that would still be a cool name.
Yeah. It looks good. Yeah. Just in terms of, you know, it being a television show and the volume, we can talk about that, but it just was a great SFX shot sound, special effects. You know what I mean, everybody.
Yeah.
this all caught me off guard today. I haven't even finished my coffee. That's why I'm a little stumbling. So that's a great shot. Anything else?
The shot of the coins falling out of the helmet, that was a great evocative shot. And it, you know, a lot of what I liked about the trailer is it feels like it is, if not just the first episode, the first two episodes, it feels like it's really making an effort to say, we're not overplaying our hand. We're telling you generally what this is about, but we're not showing you a ton, especially of any later episodes. And so it seemed like in the way it was edited that maybe the coins in the helmet was somehow related to that conflict that he appeared to be having on the streets of Tatooine there. But it's just a really evocative image of, you know, what kind of transaction is going on and what kind of it feels in the trailer like a moment of somehow great disrespect.
Yes.
But how? Why? I don't know. It's just, you know, he's worth a lot to me. You know, Boba Fett, famous line, you know, just this guy out there trying to make ends meet and get his money. You know, all those ideas tied up in this just kind of unique image. I don't know. There's the nostalgia, right?
Yeah.
There's the, yeah, especially, you know, for myself, my own perspective of, yes, having these action figures, this is a dream come true from 1983. But then it's so exciting then to see images that are like, what is that about? That's a different image, iconography combined in new ways.
I loved it as well. It made me kind of just this idea of Fett's collecting on some unpaid debts. I'm not necessarily saying that's my plot prediction, but just like it had that, because, you know, it's this little standoff in the street, doesn't look good. And then he dropped, and then there's money in the helmet. It's like he wasn't going to the arcade to play, maybe a Unaball arcade game. And I just have, I love this thought of him just going, cool, I'm back. I've got the armor. I'm in a, you know, position of power here, but I have a checklist of things that I need to fix or collect on from people who maybe have done me wrong. And I kind of like that.
Yeah, and that idea of like, well, how did that happen? Is he passing the helmet to like, is this a you know, a GoFundMe in space? What's going on? Very intrigued by that. Last one for me is that first shot of the what I believe is a Bomar Monk.
Same.
That is like if, you know, nostalgia could be a patch and just applied to my body so it gets into the bloodstream, like. I know many, many fans love the Bomar Monk, but that was for me one of the relatively early, once I started talking to other fans who had the films on VHS and watched them again and again, are like, you see that spider dude, right? What's that about? You know,
yeah,
that's one of the background characters that had been so intriguing. So to take it, it's such a literalization of what's going on with some of this, of to take something that was literally in the background and at the very front of the trailer. Put it in the foreground.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk about the Return of the Jedi vibes a little bit later here in this section, but I love that too. That's one of my choices, the Bomar Monk. Because, yeah, I have that weird relationship too, where I think I didn't even realize it was there for a lot of my childhood. I think I blocked it out. Scary spider droid is what I called it. And then realized a little bit more of the story and the Bomar Monks. And it is intriguing. I'm not expecting a Bomar Monk character. But I wouldn't mind that, especially if it was like the same one. He just, you know, I'm still working the door.
I hope that the story of that monk is just like they're like a mall walker and they're just doing laps in and around the palace for exercise.
Yeah, I don't go on the sail barge. I wasn't on the katana. I was here. No one came back.
Bib was doing laps.
Yeah. There we go. We still don't know how Bib got back here. So I love that. That shot was there for me. You mentioned the Tusken Raiders again. Just absolutely loved it. Love poster worthy kind of shots, intriguing shots. And again, doesn't seem like it's something that's in and around the palace. I expect they're going to move. They could tell me the entire series is just in the palace, an office place comedy, and I'd be okay with it. But I like the idea that, hey, we're going to be out and about on Tatooine, whether that big city, like you said, is Tatooine or not. I kind of got that feel it is. The Ithorian, man. I love, you know, here we are. Mando did such a good job of, I don't think there wasn't an answer to the sequel trilogy stuff, but a lot of the, you know, sequel trilogy conversations about, hey, where's some of our classic aliens? We love the new designs, but where's some of the old ones we grew up with? And I think that was fair to ask. And Mando's been like, oh, here they are. and I just kind of like that vibe too, of just like, it is still playing in that world. It feels like a store display of figures from 1983. And I don't mind that as a starting point for the show, because I don't think that's the meat of this show at all.
No, it's cool. No, and I mean, in something like the Ithorian, you know, one weird shot basically in A New Hope, but then spiraling out from that, not just the action figures of kind of the original trilogy era people, but like how many different video games over how many different years are you know, players encountering, interacting with Ithorians, Knights of the Old Republic, yeah. Got plenty of quality Ithorian time, all that stuff popping up a lot in animated shows. So it does just feel extremely like this sense of fun and sense of play of like, why not? They're well-known species. Mm-hmm. Let's have some, you know, speaking parts on live action screen. It's great.
Yeah, and to hear, you got the translation going, but to hear like the Ithorian kind of warble of that language, which is this kind of wonderful melodic, electronic noise, like it's at a club or something. I've always loved the Ithorian voice, and in the Bad Batch, they play with it pretty well. To see it kind of a little bit more live action, doesn't make me just think of the Cantina from New Hope, but just what we could do with the character and make it actually fully functional, even if it is just for a moment or a scene. We'll figure that out. A couple other things that stood out to me, and we'll take a deeper dive into the themes here, is I love the line. I love the setup, but I love the line of, please speak freely. It means so much.
It really does. It's, you know, yeah, I will hold back because it is, for me, it's just perfect thematic moment as well as just like, oh, yeah. And you know you're dealing with a really scary guy when they can say the nice thing and it sounds so scary.
Yeah, yeah. It's such an invitation and a threat all wrapped up in the one. And then the final thing about the trailer, just not a specific moment, and I think it definitely kind of starts leading into some of the theme discussions. I liked a lot of the moments where Fett doesn't have a helmet and that we're going to, you know, growing up in the 80s where, you know, you didn't know what was behind that helmet. And then we learned that a little bit later on. And now we got the excellent Tamara Morrison back in the role. So it just kind of makes sense that we'd want to see his face. But, that's us in the real world looking at this actor. But for Fett to be like, yeah, I'm back. Also, my helmet comes off every now and then. I just something I liked about that. This kind of new kind of Fett, a little bit more openness, a little bit more, hey, here's who I really am now, and we're going to all figure this out together. It's just something that kind of stood out to me.
I think that's a really great thing to mention. I think it was great to see his face, and I think I was just engaged with seeing his face and getting to see those eyes pop when the stick comes down. But you're so right. I think it ties into the story that we've already seen with Boba Fett, that he definitely wanted his armor back. But he's been away from it for a while, and for whatever reason that we may find out here, this is the moment he chose to actively get it. Yeah. But I think it speaks to he is going through a transition, right? That he that the armor is a part of who he is, but it is not all of who he is. And I think there's something interesting of hey, if you think I'm just this terrifying faceless hunter, let me take the helmet off and let you look into my eyes, which are just as scary as any helmet, and deal with me, not the mask, me.
Me deal with me. I love this. And this goes into transitions into our discussions of some of the themes and some of the big questions. And something too, Justin, we should probably talk about is this idea of, a lot of good, healthy servings of nostalgia, but don't think that's the meal. If you think so, I think you're missing some of the stuff that's emerging already in this trailer. We're going to dive into that. So let's start with this thing here. Joseph Boba intends to rule with respect. Oh, what does that mean? Shorter hours, longer lunch breaks? What's going on here? What do we make of this, and how does this line up with the Boba Fett that we re-met in Mandalorian?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, it's powerful to me that the trailer starts with, I am not a bounty hunter, right?
Yes,
like,
yes.
It starts with, like, if you asked a random human being on the street who only kind of knows Star Wars, like, Boba Fett, what is he? And they'd be like, oh, he's a bounty hunter guy, right? It is, like, the most basic definition of Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. So I think the fact that the trailer starts with that, to me, indicates that this isn't just the creed that he's always had, but that this is a transition. This is a choice to be like, I have fully emerged from this transformative hell that I've been through.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing things differently up to a point. I think for me, this idea of I want to rule with respect, not fear. To me, it is all about like claiming power, right? The literal claiming of a throne. But again, it goes back to that kind of question of who is Boba Fett, right? He's a clone. He doesn't really like being called just a clone. He got mad at that in Mandalorian season 2. He's been a bounty hunter, but he appears to be rejecting that. He has been a Mandalorian by creed. And it almost seems more that he's leaning into that idea of the world is brutal. So you got to fight back. My dad taught me that. I got shown that when he was murdered in front of me. That's been my life experience. The world is brutal. So you got to push back. But hey, wait.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't always have to be slaughtering each other. Maybe we can have some basic respect. It makes him into this extremely dark version of a Jedi, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Even a Jedi is like, hey, look, you're really doing something that's not okay. Can I help you? If you won't accept my help, could you at least stop? If you refuse to stop, I might have to cut your hand off. And if you keep going, we're going to go places you really don't want to go. I really don't want to go. But it's all done from this very, you know, light side perspective, you know. Mm-hmm. And this almost feels more like the, I don't need to be a raging monster. I just need you to respect the fact that I can be a raging monster.
Yeah.
And not live this petty life of stabbing each other in the back all the time. Just deal with me honestly.
Yeah, there's something I love about this here. And I'll just start with the original question that I was asking of you of what do we make of this respect thing? I don't mean to just make some one-off joke about Boba Fett gets his groove back, but it's kind of the idea I'm thinking of, just like this is a guy who's been through a lot, has worked, perhaps potentially worked through a lot of pain, but still kind of really knows that violence is a necessity and perhaps even a joy at times for him. But this idea of just, this is, I kind of keep making this joke of like a second career, a new lease on life. And what did he go through in the bowels of the Sarlacc pit and how he got out? And in this time that we didn't get to spend time with him at all, where Cobb Vanth run around in his armor and Boba Fett's kind of strolling around the land on some, spiritual rebirth. I don't know. And what does that actually mean? Is there good in him? What's driving him? And now to sit here, just kind of be like, I'm the boss, but we're going to do it my way. And you might like my way. It's just some big questions about this character that we grew up not really knowing much about. And that's what I love about the idea of this series. And that's why I don't feel it's just this nostalgia pop. It is this like, let's take what you knew and let's go beyond it, which is what we, again, wanted out of Mando season 2. And I I think it's fair to say we got that in the small amount of time that we got Boba Fett, and just kind of reaffirms the idea that, hey, this idea of a show has some meat on it, I think, versus, hey, wouldn't it be cool if? You can start there, but you need to go beyond that. And I think just him sitting there going, I'm not a bounty hunter. You're so right, Joseph. That's a great way to start this trailer. While you're dealing with the Boimar monk nostalgia, Ithorian stuff, here's him going, F your nostalgia. That ain't me. And you're going to find the new me. I really love that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you're saying. There's something kind of a emotional and mythic about, like, what did he go through, not just in the bowels of the Sarlacc, but out of it, right? What mm-hmm. kind of, you know, how long did he wander the desert, perhaps literally having, you know, visions? But he's emerging in this world of transformation, right? There's the New Republic, the Empire is gone, kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
And this idea that he would say, I have been a cog in everybody else's machine my entire life, and I'm not being the cog anymore. I'm being the boss of the machine is so powerful. And I think that's what that, I am not a bounty hunter. It's like, I don't run errands for other people. I'm going to rebuild this world, my underworld, this world that I've been a part of. Yeah. And rebuild it to operate with more dignity, maybe. But what I really love about that final line, that the speak freely, is such a great just a bad guy, a scary line. But this is what gives the trailer such tension to me. If it, very early on, we get introduced to this idea of, like, I want to rule respect, not fear. And then the trailer ends with him trying to scare the bleep out of somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and that idea of, it's a weird comparison to make, but there's parts of this that make me feel, think of The Wire. Like, you know, there's storylines in The Wire where people from all different parts of the system are trying to change the system, and the system doesn't want to be changed, even down to, you know, drug dealers who are realizing, you know, it's the violence that's a problem. It's the violence that begets more violence between us. It's the violence that brings the cops' attention. The cops kind of don't care if we sell drugs. They care if bodies pile up. So let's try to change the system, and the system resists. And there's almost that energy to this for me with Boba Fett, of him going, like, I'm going to change the system, and everyone around me is going to make that impossible.
Which kind of transitions into the next topic sentence. And also, I want to mention we're going to discuss Fennec Shand as well, who's all over this trailer. Ming-Na Wen, so excited to see what she can do with this character here. But this idea, you talked about it there. Boba wants kind of cooperation to reach combined goals, not conflict, which would sound inspiring, Joseph. A real cat hanging on a log, hanging in there kind of vibe. Except, as the trailer points out, this is still the underworld, and this is the early days of the New Republic. We're a few years in. We already know what's kind of going over in the Mando world. In the Mando, this is part of the Mando verse, but we got the vibe of the Outer Rim that is still a little hard for the New Republic to clamp down on. So, hey, that also means it's a land of opportunity for folks like this. What do we make about that? Of this, like, hey, you know, if we stop fighting, like you just said, Joseph, if we stop fighting, we might be able to make some headway. Headway doing what is the question I want to know.
Yeah, he's got that line of, why speak of conflict when cooperation can make us all rich, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think it is like, oh, I've learned that violence is wrong. And in fact, let's stop doing any bad things. And, you know, let's just go around and let's feed the hungry. Like, that's clearly not going on. You're totally right. It's the underworld.
Sorry, I'm laughing at that. And it's a good cause. But Boba Fett going, I want to feed the hungry in the galaxy.
We need to plant some more trees. That's what Tatooine needs, is trees. We can do it. I think for me, that's what, another thing that's going to make this really interesting. If I had to guess, I think that the philosophy that Boba Fett has been born into and his life experiences probably create that view that, look, this stuff is going to happen. Like, no amount of Jedi, no amount of government is ever going to make it so the spice doesn't flow, you know?
Yeah.
People are going to take spice. People are going to, you know, take out hits on one another. People are going to want protection. Just a little bit of that pessimist isn't quite right, nor is nihilistic, but somewhere in between pessimism and nihilism, that more dark view of, hey, it's life. Like, look, if you have a community, someone is always going to go in and skim some money off the top of everybody.
Right.
So the protection racket is always going to be there. The only question is who.
Right.
If he's starting from that philosophy of like, somebody's going to fill this vacuum that Jabba did. We're not going to just have a nice little nonprofit. Tatooine's not going to be a friendly co-op.
Yeah.
That I will fill it, and I will fill it in a way where there is respect and dignity.
I love it. I'm not super familiar with The Wire as a show. Totally get its place in TV pop culture landscape. It's such a well-received, well-reviewed show. So I'm not going to lie and say I'm an expert on the show at all, but I love you drawing that kind of connection there. And this idea of, I'm just trying to place it into Star Wars a little bit of, again, New Republic, new opportunity, but also if we do it right, we maybe won't run afoul of this new government. We can kind of do our own thing until they get up on their legs. We'll deal with that another time. And again, we're not here to feed the hungry. We're here to feed ourselves. But there's a way to do that. And I am someone who has served my whole life and I ain't going to serve no more. That's a great place to start and have those conversations. And please speak freely unless you're against what I'm trying to do here. Then we'll have another conversation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think for me, I'm very intrigued by that underworld idea of somebody who believes that there's always going to be an underworld. And the only question is who is going to run it? Versus the more optimistic view of the New Republic or the Jedi, who say like, well, no, we can take care of people's needs another way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I'm saying is this ends with Carson Teva showing up to confront Boba Fett, right? No?
I think Carson Teva better keep his distance.
One of the favorite shots in the trailer, I think for both of us too, and I've already seen people tweeting about it, is Fennec and Boba Fett atop the palace there. What looked maybe was Jabba's old master bedroom, looking out onto Tatooine and the curtains there. Great shot. And we're excited for Fennec Shand. We got to meet her in Mandalorian and then get to know her a little bit more in Bad Batch. And a very interesting character, especially her relationship to Omega and the moments we got to see her. I tossing this out to you, Joseph, here kind of on the fly. What do you think so far, Fennec, in this trailer? Again, we only got a minute, 48 seconds of this show to pick apart, but she's pretty vocal. She's pretty up front and center here in Boba's plans.
Yeah, I know. I love how aligned she is with Boba. And if she has been a bounty hunter for a long time, she's the up and comer that we is what we're told in Bad Batch of like she's really making a name for herself.
Right.
That she would also be like, I am tired of the grind, right? I'm tired of being a cog in other people's machines. And just what I see right now is just like not only that sort of loyalty built on that respect of he saved me and so I am with him, and then I see him walking the walk. You know, I don't think it was his favorite thing to do is to do everything he did in Mandalorian season 2 to help Din, but that was the deal he made and he keeps his word. Right. So this idea of this really strong bond between the two of them, because they've both been through the hell of being bounty hunters who have a lot of power and a lot of fear, but not really a lot of control of the systems, ultimately coming together to go, let's do this. I like that she feels all in. And I kind of like that this trailer is, there's a ton of great shots of her. There's a ton of great line deliveries, but this trailer is not about her. And it makes me excited for future trailers of, is that more room to explore of saying, showing us a little bit what maybe her personal arc or her personal challenge is.
Yeah, no, a good point. This is a teaser trailer for the show that serves Boba Fett. It is all about learning about him here, too. I agree with you there and intrigued. And I am, again, I am approaching the show with so just wide open expectations of just like I have not spent a lot of time thinking about the show. Therefore, her place in the show is staying as is a solid number two, running afoul of him or something happening. I am just intrigued. And she's such a great performer. And everyone immediately took to her as Fennec Shand. And so to have Ming-Na Wen front and center is a victory for Star Wars overall. So excited for that here. Starting to wrap up our discussion about this, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot more to discuss, especially November 12th, as we race towards the show. If Mandalorian has been and was kind of a New Hope vibe for some, right? I think that's fair to say. It was kind of like, hey, remember that cantina we all love? Favreau loved it. We're going to tell a story with some of that stuff. Dump the action figures on the floor, as we have said, and they have said many times in interviews. This one, without a doubt, I think it was, I saw Kevin Scott tweet out of just like, I am such a huge Return of the Jedi fan. And I'm so excited for this. And it really just did make me focus on the Return of the Jedi of it all, from the Boromar monk, you know, Gamorrean guards in the background, other characters, and just that great shot that made me think of Battlefront 1 and 2 when you're running around Jabba's palace and fighting on the outside. It's just a classic shot of the palace on the hill there. I actually paused it a few times to do that weird thing I do where I study like maps and stuff. I was like, okay, that's the front door. Where do you park the katana? Where do you, I really love that shot. So let's talk about the Return of the Jedi vibe of it all. Do you see it like that at all, Joseph?
Absolutely. I know people have a million different experiences depending on when they came to Star Wars. But, you know, from my experience, Return of the Jedi was such an explosion of like the cantina was a little drop. And then Jabba's palace was boom of not just like, cool, the aliens are weird, but just like there's this whole culture. And there are all these questions of like, not only what's the weird spider thing, but like, how many more creatures does Jabba have under pits?
Yeah.
You know, and they, Fennec Shand uses the term menagerie, which is like, well, if the Rancor is not hungry, we got something else for you.
Yeah.
Obviously we see the cages and the tentacle comes out. So we don't all know what's in there, but also just like the community of it, the culture of it, of like, we know some of these characters are bounty hunters, but who are these other characters who just like party hard and then sleep on the floor of his throne room? You know, and it opened up this idea of just kind of wanting to see more of this world, that space, that is such great classic tip of the iceberg storytelling. And then over all the years of video games and animated series and video games where you get to literally wander around more of the palace, we've got a little bit of the, in the more expanded kind of storytelling of getting to play around here, but this sort of promise on the screen of like you said, that turret, if that is Jabba's palace, it looks like it. Like, yeah, is that, that's Jabba's balcony where he'd go out to think his thoughts. Right. That is just exciting. Because it does tie to the Mandalorian, storytelling of, tip of the iceberg. Did you ever want to know more about Jawas and Tusken Raiders? Here we go. And this does feel a little bit more of tip of the iceberg, specifically of Jabba's palace, his world, the Return of the Jedi. Again, it feels very, very much on purpose that a creature that we are fascinated with because they were shadowing the background is literally brightly lit in the foreground is a mission statement for this show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about that. And again, because I feel this trailer does tell you we are going in different spots with this character and this setting that you love. I am not concerned about nostalgia overload here. And I also think I've always been on the side of nostalgia ain't a bad thing in Star Wars. And you've always pointed out too, Joseph, it's kind of baked in to George Lucas himself going, I loved these stories as a kid. Let me tell you some versions of them. So I don't think it's inherently wrong. I do understand the concerns of overload and maybe that stops some of you at the door and you don't want to come into the palace and have fun with the rest of us. I totally get that. But I really do think this trailer is indicating that they're going to go beyond the nostalgia, but at the same time, that feeling you had as a 7-year-old. And that's the note I wrote for myself. That little 7-year-old Kenny kind of got excited seeing that palace and knowing that we're going to spend some time there in this place that sparked many daydreams of what happens there. And I make those jokes, but turning that corner in Battlefront on maps and going, oh my gosh, this is like a little bathhouse side of the palace I didn't know existed. There's a big like hookah thing in the center. There's like that grand meeting room. Like there's a lot of things that I'm just like fascinated because we only got to see this tiny corner of it because that's kind of all George and the team could give us in 1983. And it was a great effort from them. Obviously, it made such a mark on us. But to actually roam around the palace in a way is an intriguing thing for me. So I'm excited about that. Any final thoughts, Joseph?
Yeah, I think just to really agree with you, I think there is that we're going to be getting a lot of Star Wars, so we're going to be having this conversation again. Yep. I think we'll probably see here's a huge speculation. I think we'll see Tatooine again in Kenobi. So there's a part of you, the general you, that can give in to cynicism, right? And go, it's Tatooine again. Like, yeah, it's live action, but yeah, but we've seen Jabba's Palace a million times. In the Clone Wars alone, who else has stood in front of that dais, right? That throne, you know, Dooku, Anakin, Obi-Wan. So you could go like, have we been here before? But for me, I am choosing to listen to my inner child who said, you know, in the inner child from very young ages to, you know, inner child from 2 years ago, who's like, I want to know more. Yeah. I don't want to just randomly, you know, roam around those halls in a video game. I want to get in there and understand that culture, understand that perspective. And for me, I'm just kind of listening to my inner child who is extremely excited to see more of something I love. Mm-hmm. And then also inner child and I guess outer adult, outer adult who's excited because the trailer is telling us, in my opinion, that we're not just rehashing stuff. This is literally a character in a moment of transition trying to change the system. It is actively about the character and this underworld culture trying to be something new. And that tells me there'll be a great balance for every moment of just nostalgia. It's an Athorian. There's going to be this push toward the new because that's the story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the final thought for me is I think the key thing from that trailer is how it begins. Like you said, Boba Fett saying, nope, not a bounty hunter. You might have known me as that, but that's not who I am now. And that is the story. The rest is just wonderful seasoning. Boamar Monk seasoning on this Boba Fett soup. And look, I'm being honest. Like, I'm so excited for Kenobi, so excited for Andor. This has never been a show I've been overlooking because it's Star Wars. I'm someone who loves Bad Batch, and I know that didn't grab everyone. I'm someone who just flips on Star Wars when I'm not getting ready to talk about it on a podcast. I know a lot of you out there listening are that too. I'm not saying I've overlooked Boba Fett. I'm just saying this is a leadoff hitter for a big Star Wars lineup coming our way, and I'm excited to just finally get to it and excited to just go into Boba Fett with an open mind. And like I said, no expectations means almost more excitement for me because I have no idea what I'm about to see.
Yeah, exactly. I feel for me, a short version of final thought is the shows like this feel like creators who love Star Wars going, hey, what's over there? Yeah. And I want to go with them while they go look at what's over there.
To quote Tina Fey, I want to go to there. All right. Book of Boba Fett hits our living rooms on December 29th. And yeah, you better believe Force Center will be ready with a deep dive into all the action, the comedy, the whimsy of Boba Fett. And of course, the big giant themes, because that's what we absolutely love. A couple other quick news items here we want to talk about. Speaking of Kenobi, this one actually got me excited. You know, these actors go out to promote other things, and of course the interviewers are going to be like, oh, by the way, you're in some Star Wars. And I just loved hearing O'Shea Jackson Jr. speak about his experience on Obi-Wan Kenobi. He was speaking with someone from Collider there. The first thing, Joseph, as we're here, we're excited for Boba Fett, which, by the way, we don't even really know the cast. We haven't seen not about even other human actors in the trailer, a couple shots here and there. But we keep forgetting that this Kenobi cast, pretty awesome. We had this conversation with Kumail Nanjiani a little bit ago where it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. He's part of it, too. O'Shea Jackson Jr. is in the Kenobi cast, and he got the spotlight this week. Any thoughts on just that of like, oh, yeah, we got a lot of names.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really powerful and interesting that the cast of Kenobi is obviously extremely talented actors, but there's also this element to them that is similar to The Mandalorian, where there's kind of a wide net of places that different audience members would know these people from, right? The worlds of comedy or the worlds of this different kind of filmmaking or acting. So I'm just kind of excited by that idea that, okay, we are telling a very, very Star Wars story about one of the main characters of Star Wars, you know, facing off against one of the other main characters of Star Wars. But let's really widen the net and try to bring in as many people as possible by attracting audience members who might know all these different actors from different places and different kind of pockets of our culture.
Yeah, it's just smart casting. It works for a lot of other big franchises that do well. The box office, which is not always, you know, it's not always the end goal, but it definitely helps in this for-profit Hollywood business. But just like you said, casting this net of bringing in a lot of different folks and a lot of new eyes to Star Wars, even if it's one or two eyes, it's new eyes. And I love that as a Star Wars fan. He was promoting his Apple TV show, Swagger. And I love he spoke about his love of the franchise growing up. And you and I have had the conversation before, Joseph, of some actors absolutely love it. And that's great for us. And some, hey, they're not familiar with Star Wars. And that's great for us as well. It's all what's on the screen. But it just was really cool. And as someone who's, you know, he's been making his mark last few years as a performer there and writer. He had previously auditioned for Lando and Solo, which I think I kind of vaguely remember. I just kind of like that revelation. Donald Glover obviously got the role and did an amazing job. But I liked hearing that he's just been chomping at the bit to get into Star Wars.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's so charming in the interview, which is always just fun and great to see. And I loved his honesty about like, yeah, I didn't get Lando and I was crushed. I was just like, I'm not going to act anymore. Like, yeah. And then that joking comment that he was actually watching Star Wars before the interview. And it really sounded like this idea of just like, it's just what I had on.
Yes. Yes.
You know, yeah. And that's infectious. That's fun.
Yeah. Like a guy I could hang out with at a party. Because that's seriously. It's like, oh, I need to watch Revenge of the Sith for Force Center this week. Well, let me turn off Phantom Menace and I'll watch Revenge of the Sith for home. He spoke again about being totally immersed in the volume. And we always hear great praise for the volume from actors. And I've always said this personally, it doesn't always work for me as a viewer. And it's got to the point where I don't even mean that negative. I just can't unsee it. And eventually I will. But even in the Boba Fett trailer, I was like, oh, good use of the volume, or it's in my head. Like, and that's me. That's a me thing. Where are you right now with this rapidly advancing technology that's only going to get bigger and better? When you hear them talk about it, what does it make you think?
I think my knee-jerk reaction is that I'm happy that this technology exists, which is going to be able to expand lots of kinds of storytelling for lots of people. Like right now we're looking at it as a Star Wars thing, but it's already spreading out. And if this technology kind of becomes normal, I think it's just going to be able to open up people's lots of different creators' imagination. And that's really exciting to me. Mm-hmm. And then as somebody, I haven't done a ton of film acting or directing, but I've done a ton of stage acting and directing. And knowing how important that is to actors, you know, I think we've heard it so much that it can become kind of like, yeah, that's what you just say on the interview. It was a great project. I fell in love with the script. The volume is great. You know, like eventually it's going to be like it loses its impact. But I feel like it's an honest thing that actors are saying, that it makes such a huge difference to feel like you're in that space, to be lost in it is huge for the actors. And I think really does impact the performance. So I think any reactions I have to how does it actually look on the screen are overwhelmed by what it does for the performance and what it's going to do for storytelling down the line.
Yeah. And I think I brought it up because this time around, like I'm hearing a lot of these newer performers coming on Kenobi, right, who haven't experienced before, including Ewan McGregor himself. And the way they're just blown away just helps calm my nerves. I just always have to be a little honest, like season one of Mando just kind of at times didn't look all great for me, you know, and I don't want to be this bah humbug new technology. I just love out on location. I love Rise of Skywalker going to get a shot in the desert because they needed the light. And I think the volume is going to get better and better and better. And I think you're going to see not necessarily Star Wars, it could be movies shot in that kind of way too. I have to imagine George Lucas visits the set and just goes, yeah, this is what I wanted. Can we redo Phantom Menace? I am intrigued more and more. And as more and more new actors come on board and go, wow, this is something impressive. It does make me excited and calms my nerves. And there might be people out there who have some of those volume nerves like I do. It's a curse. We'll get rid of it. We'll work through it together. And I love hearing things like this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm with you. I don't think it always 100% works. There's other things where I was like totally tricked of like, yeah, they went somewhere for that, didn't they? No, right. No, they didn't. I really think that first season of Mandalorian is going to be sooner rather than later. It is going to look like watching an early talkie.
Yeah.
Right. We're like, this is amazing. But you can also see that it's the first steps. I think things like, you know, exactly how much real location they mix in to different scenes, you know, so you really forget so you're really like, I don't know if this one is, it was shot inside or outside. I think learning which camera angles make it feel more seamless and which camera angles make you feel a little bit like they're standing in front of a flat, you know?
Yeah.
I think those things, there's just going to be more and more nuance to the way they use it.
Yeah. Look, and I was someone who was getting, you know, a little grumpy with it in season one. And when I learned in those making ofs that even, you know, the client's office was completely on the volume, I kind of shut up a little bit because I fell for it.
Yeah.
There you go. Obviously he didn't give too many hints on his role. The interview was trying to do what Ash Croshen does pretty effortlessly of, did you hold a lightsaber, that kind of stuff. But he did mention how much he connected with Ewan McGregor and Kumail Nanjiani. We already know from previous news reports, Kumail says he's got a lot of screen time with Ewan McGregor, even being intimidated by Obi-Wan. So, Joseph, I think that's enough information for us to speculate wildly. What do you got?
Yeah, no, now we know the character name. Now we know it all. Costume. No, I think for me, I continue to think and hear these things from these actors that sound like there's a little bit more of a substantive role. You know, it's relatively short, six episodes, right?
Yeah.
But it keeps making me feel like this is not going to be, you know, Kenobi alone staring out at horizons. I think maybe the first episode and the last, but along the way, there's going to be this very quest-like journey, you know, like a Wizard of Oz making his trip through the galaxy and encountering people. And that's really fascinating to me. The plot-wise, I'm interested in, like, logistically, who does he need to encounter to kind of facilitate his journey, his quest, his adventure. But also, the more people that Kenobi meets after he's been in isolation for a while, the more he is going to feel some impact of what's going on in the galaxy, you know, how much people have lost hope, how much pain they're in, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I kind of now go with this idea, again, wild speculation of O'Shea and Kumail kind of being not necessarily ruffians or anything, but just like people who Kenobi maybe normally wouldn't associate with, but now he kind of needs to. And it does kind of bridge the gap of what you're talking about, of Kenobi being reminded of what's really going on out there in the galaxy. And therefore maybe the importance of his overall mission with Luke to keep hope alive and that kind of stuff. And I kind of see a team up in a way versus the idea of just them being adversaries for Kenobi. At least that's what I would like at this point, but it's very early.
It is very early. Yeah, no, I'll go with low-level Imperials or scoundrels. Those are my guesses.
Good guesses. We mentioned the client, Werner Herzog. Not Werner. Werner Herzog. I want to see the baby. If you're on TikTok, that's all over the TikTok now, that sound clip. And his office, the client, it's something we asked for, and this is a little bit of a follow-up to a news story last week, Joseph, with the Hasbro PulseCon, all the kind of reveals of the figures coming our way and all the other merchandise. We finally got it. We're finally going to get the client, a 6-inch Black Series version of Werner Herzog as the client. He's in Star Wars, comes with a Camtono and a tracking fob. How many are we getting of these each, Joseph?
Yes, I want to purchase the client. as much like he wanted to see the baby, I want to purchase the client. Yeah, I don't generally collect the Black Series. I only have a few, but I'll get this, right? It's just a great celebration of the fun, strange casting that they did in The Mandalorian of the this, you know, auteur director. This great and a fascinating take on everything Star Wars. And he did an amazing job in the show. He's a compelling character. So, of course, I want to celebrate that. And, you know, I wish that he came with an actual drink so I could celebrate the closing of our shared narrative. But I'll just have a drink when I buy this.
Absolutely. Oh, that's going to be the best Joseph Scrimshaw cocktail photo in the world. I'm looking forward to that one.
Oh, giant space cocktail next to the client. Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. I, as I've said before here, you know, I've slowed my collecting just the space, money and time and all those kind of things. But yeah, this is going to be on a shelf. I might even put it in like a shadow box with a spotlight on it. There's just something intriguing about this here because of who he is and who the performer behind the character is. And it's fun to kind of see him in Star Wars. It just kind of makes it all super official that he's in figure form.
So exactly.
We'll keep you updated on. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I love that he comes with a tracking fob, and that'd be fun if, you know, you had to use the tracking fob to actually find him. That'd be fun.
Love it. We'll keep you updated on new figures that got us intrigued here. But that is a look at Star Wars news. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, we have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have?
Yeah, there is a great new Star Wars book that is continuing the story of the Star Wars Visions short, The Duel. It is called Ronin by Emma Miko Kanden. That's the one we're recommending.
It is. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got some great questions coming your way here on ForceCenter. Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet, the Jabba's Palace of our underworld. All right, Joseph, we've got some questions. What do you got?
Well, first I have to wonder what our underworld is. It's just, it's mesmerizing in the best way. Anyway, we got four questions as always, two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. We'll go first to Twitter in Kyler Mark Allred. Kyler says, with the Anakin Renaissance happening, who is a character you would love to come back for their own Renaissance, whether it's a Disney Plus show, a movie, or in the books? I would love more stories about Mace Windu and how he became the Jedi Master we know him to be. This is a great question. We talked last week about Anakin, of course, confirmed for Kenobi and heavily rumored to be appearing in the Ahsoka show as well. So where do you go with this, Ken? Who do you want to see have a renaissance like Anakin?
This is a kind of specific question versus just, hey, what kind of other shows would you want? And it gets me thinking, and it's funny because some of our previous answers have come true, right? Hey, a little more Qui-Gon, a little more Padme, a little more Dooku. We've kind of been fortunate enough as Star Wars fans to get that. So there's some places I've gone before of who I want to see in additional series. But I went with this one. I just kind of went with my gut. And it actually, it's funny, Kyler asked this question. I had this random thought earlier in the week. It just, again, Joseph and I were always just thinking about Star Wars, whether microphones in front of us or not. I would like to see a Disney Plus show. It wouldn't be a movie, but it could definitely work as a book, but I'd love to see the performers in these roles. I'm sneaking in a two-for-one answer here. Tobias Beckett and Val. Mm. And whether it's a Bonnie and Clyde kind of story, we know where they kind of end up, but there's something about them come together, and is there a kind of a theme of, I believe that there's a part of Tobias Beckett that wants to leave this world, but he can't. And that's part of the lesson there for Han. And there's some things he's saying that are true, but I think he's long since just kind of been defeated by this world he's a part of. I think we obviously know there's a lot still on the table, that character of Val. And there was that one-shot comic of kind of the crew in action, which was actually pretty good, an underrated kind of one-shot Marvel comic. Go back 5 years, them together, throw in the death of Aurra Sing, but just explore these two people trying to survive in this time frame and how maybe they want to change, but they can't, or maybe Val doesn't really want to. She doesn't believe him. I don't know. There's something there, and frame it with kind of a Star Wars scoundrel love story, an underworld love story. It might just be only popular to me, but that's something that I thought. Just those two characters getting a little bit of a renaissance just a couple years after Solo.
I love that. And if you could wave a magic wand or I guess a Jedi mind trick to the right people, how would this be presented? What kind of medium?
I mean, again, I would love to see the performance in the role. So a Disney Plus show tucked into some corner of Star Wars where, you know, I don't have to hear all the complaints. I can just enjoy this show. But also it could work in a book real well. I just would love to see, again, those actors in the role. But I think a little Star Wars book, I'm thinking of like Alex Segura's younger Poe Dameron novel, something like that, where it's just a kind of, it lives on the shelf and it's there and it adds. And I don't ever think I don't need to have a book make something in the movies be more powerful, but that's kind of the benefit of Star Wars and the tip of the iceberg storytelling kind of way you can approach things. Like, you could build it emotionally. I'm not saying, you know, timeline wise, but emotionally build it to some of the stuff we get with them in the beginning of Solo, and maybe have it make it have a little bit more impact for those who read the book, you know. And I know that moment was much talked about and controversial at times, if you want to get in those discussions, but to make it kind of fill that backstory, fill that love story, and give you those big emotional connections. Could work.
Yeah, no, I. Yeah, no, I love that that idea, that relationship, and that perspective that, you know, everybody needs somebody that Val is so clear on. That would be really fun to see explore. Yeah, the love life of scoundrels with those actors in particular would get a big thumbs up from me. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely intrigued by Mace Windu. I know a lot of people are intrigued by the idea that he would survive. Hey, I love Samuel L. Jackson. I kind of like that. The end of the Jedi Order at that time was also the end of Mace Windu. That works for me.
Yeah.
But I would love to see Mace Windu in his prime just going around having Jedi adventures. Again, I think the High Republic really shows us that, you know, the entire galaxy doesn't have to be at stake. The soul of the Jedi can be at stake as they try to just handle a specific problem. So, like, a 6 episode Disney Plus show about young Mace Windu, I'd be all up for that. So to the spirit of Kyler's question, with kind of a more main character like Mace, like, yeah, no, that might be one of my big choices. But honestly, one of the characters that I keep wanting to hear more about is Quinlan Vos. Just a really compelling character from the brief amount of time we spent with him in canon Star Wars storytelling. And the fact that he is alive, and what after the Jedi Purge, but we don't know for how long, you know, keep waiting to see if he will pop up in something that exists. But wow, what a great character to explore, having survived Order 66. So Quinlan Vos gets a vote from me.
I would definitely tune in for that one. Just something intriguing about a post Jedi life, because he's already been through some things.
Yeah.
Jedi, the dark side. And does he adjust to it? Does he adjust too well to it? I don't know. A life outside of the Jedi Order. That'd be interesting. And a life on the run.
Yeah. Any more for you?
No, other than that list of things, the shows and characters, I still want to just continue the story, which is maybe slightly different than a renaissance. And look, by the way, talking about renaissance, you know, give me the Jar Jar renaissance. We've kind of got the Ahmed Best renaissance in Star Wars, thankfully.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm okay with a little Jar Jar renaissance. Find a way to make that happen. I'd be on board for that.
Yeah, hey, look, you know what? I hope he shows up in the Book of Boba Fett.
Absolutely.
I'd be thrilled with that. All right, we'll move on to a next question from Michael Gibbons. Michael says, after listening to your Secrets of the Sith episode, I've been thinking that I'd love a 4-episode miniseries about Rey's father from birth to death. We could learn lots about the galaxy between trilogies and Palpatine's evil machinations. Do you think we'll ever learn his story? So Michael here is talking about a 4-episode miniseries, because as Star Wars fans, our main job in life right now is to get excited about potential Disney Plus series.
Yeah.
Totally understandable. Did want to start this conversation with the fact that we probably are going to get some more about the son of Palpatine, Rey's father, from this upcoming Luke and Lando adventure book called Shadow of the Sith. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, but specifically from the Lucasfilm description of that book, here's what that says. As Ochi hunts Rey and her parents to the edge of the galaxy, Luke and Lando race into the mystery of the Sith's lingering shadow and aid a young family running for their lives. So that to me sounds like we'll spend a little bit of time with Rey's father and maybe learn some of that stuff. What are your thoughts on this, Ken? What do you think we're going to get in the book? What more do you want? Yeah. What are you hungry for? What do you want from Rey's father?
I am hungry for more Chad Palpatine. I really am. I absolutely am. And to Michael's direct question, will ever learn this story in a miniseries? I don't think that will happen. I think this is how we're going to get that kind of stuff. But I think it's really interesting. It's not just a parental issue kind of story, but you can explore a little bit of that when your quote unquote dad is, you know, the emperor. That's pretty powerful storytelling. But also to get a little reveal of the Sith, the legacy of the Sith, not being able to let go, and how someone like this can completely reject that line early on, and how that could maybe connect. How much does that find its way into the heart of Rey? You know, I think a lot of her journeys answering that in a different way, and all that kind of stuff. And I don't want to take away from Ray's experiences and Ray's emotional and even literal and physical stands against evil. But, you know, how much is imprinted on her from that? I am definitely intrigued. And I think that the Shadow of the Sith is a perfect way to get it.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see how much we're going to get. I love a ton of the things you're saying. I love kind of what Michael is getting to about learning more about the galaxy through Ray's father. Learning if his name is Chad Palpatine,
right.
Extremely important.
Finally,
what is his name? So yeah, there's that excitement of how does he process not just his place in this, but just kind of the history of the galaxy, like the understanding of we know he rejected his father, but you know, did Sheev try to put on any sort of face of kindness? Did he try to manipulate this one clone who worked, or you know, is this this being only kind of aware of their own existence and then, you know, shoved in front of a rotting corpse hanging from a hook. And it's like, meet dad. He wants to be, you to be like this. You know, is it just like, you know, like Frankenstein's monster coming to life and going, nah, no, I'm getting out of here. But how much he understands like the history of the galaxy and himself. And I think one of the most intriguing things about it, and maybe something that would, I don't know, it might change or flavor people's opinion about the whole Palpatine story, to take Rey's father, Palpatine's son, Chad Palpatine, whatever we want to call him, and imbue him with the same amount of identity and respect that the clones of the Clone Wars have, right?
Yeah,
because I think sometimes when we think and talk about Palpatine's clones, it feels like maybe it's a little too sci-fi. It's a little too like, well, who is he?
Right,
he's just
right.
Okay. He's just, he's running around having a family. Why? You know, like I think sometimes when we can get negative, it's that. But the, think of how much just personality and storytelling and individuality is springing from each and every clone of Jango Fett, right?
Yeah.
The idea that this character would have that same level of like, you know, the way the clones did of, oh, I guess we're supposed to be numbers, but just something inside us says, no, we want names.
There's,
you know, and explore that from the perspective of you're the son of the worst thing that's ever lived.
What I love in the Secrets of the Sith kind of touched upon it. And we do recommend you guys check that book out if you haven't already. This is Palpatine, and there's without a doubt, I don't have any doubt that the Palpatine, if he doesn't like you or something and it's not working for his clone stuff, you're done, you're gone, you're killed. What about this particular clone made him go, well, hold on, he's got enough fire in him that he might go, I don't know, maybe settle down and have a family one day, and this might factor into something. What about it? What made it work? What made Palpatine press pause on the delete button there? That kind of ties into, I think, what you're saying of personality and identity and individuality versus giant test tubes over there in Exegol. How did this one emerge? It's something there. There's something powerful there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm super excited about it. I'm trying to contain my excitement about how much we'll learn in this this book, Shadow of the Sith, specifically about that, because it sounds like Luke and Lando are the main focus, and then this is you know, a part of the plot mechanics. But I am also excited just in general, when you're thinking about these kind of stories ending up on screen someday, I think maybe there's a possibility of not super soon, but eventually, and it will come by blazingly fast. There will come a point where the generation that grew up with the sequel trilogy as their Star Wars, they will be the people who are driving. They'll have peak cultural and purchasing power.
Yeah.
And we might have to wait a little bit, but then I think we'll see a lot more of these sequel era stories on screen.
I agree. Look forward on Force Center 2000 when we break down the Chad Palpatine series.
Exactly. I thought you were going to maybe just stop at when we break down.
That's possible.
It could happen. All right. Two more questions from patrons on Patreon. First, Andrew Holmes. Andrew says, hello, Force Centarians. I recently received Star Wars Rebellion as a gift, and I have to say it is an absolute blast. The gameplay itself is really thematic, fun, and immersive, and really puts you into the mindset of either the Empire or Rebellion. These kind of games have really deepened my love of the franchise through this kind of lived experience. Have either of you delved into tabletop or RPG games? And if so, how have these impacted your love of Star Wars? Ken, you're not a big gamer, but how much have you gamed?
In terms of tabletops and RPGs, not a ton. I do own and used to play the hell out of Star Wars Monopoly. So that kind of is like a role-playing game when you're just kind of going around and purchasing up the galaxy. But I've got Star Wars Rebellions up on my screen right now. I'm looking at it here. And you know what? I've seen this. I've seen this around, seen this on display at some conventions. And this does seem like a fun Friday night. This does seem, because you know, I grew up on those classic kind of board games, and I know a lot of people have you know, moved past those kind of games. It's, they don't want to be a hobby; they want to be something a little more serious. And I respect that. But this could be fun. I've never had the chance, and I had some friends, the old Collider job, who would play this game too, and would speak exactly on the game like Andrew's speaking of, just themes and fun and just this immersive experience. So I would like to eventually, when I have time, to try it, because I think it would do just what Andrew's saying, expand the love of Star Wars and impact your love of Star Wars, which is something I continue to love. I just love experiencing it even this many years into loving Star Wars.
Yeah, well said. And looking at this on Fantasy Flight Games website, it is for two to four players, and it has one awards, it looks like, for Best Two-Player Game, Dice Tower Gaming Award. And it is just straightforward, the Rebellion versus the Empire, which, Ken, that is your kind of intro point to your love of Star Wars, right? You used to say you were more about the war than the lore, because you're like, yeah, it's the Rebellion versus the Empire. So time is always such a factor of, we want to embrace Star Wars in all these ways. So we are not promising this, because time is a challenge. But a two-player game, you and I could sit down and play this.
We could do it. And you know what? I got my Rebel baseball cap. I got my Imperial baseball cap. You know, whatever side you are, you have to wear the hat. Yeah.
I mean, you can hold your hats behind your back and I'll have to pick one or something. That's how we decide who gets to play. Yeah. I'm kind of in an interesting place with this for myself, is I have done a lot of role-playing and tabletop gaming. I haven't done as much of it in recent times because of different life changes, but particularly when I lived in Minneapolis, many of my friends are big gamers. Many of my friends worked or still work for Fantasy Flight Games. I probably know people in the credits for this game. So gaming was a big, big part of my life, but I haven't had the chance to really explore it in the Star Wars vein. When I was playing a lot, not as many of these games existed yet. But I really, really relate to what Andrew was saying about your connection being increased by this lived experience, as Andrew says so well. Some of the games that I played a lot, there's this very weird, very obscure Cthulhu game called The Hills Rise Wild. And it's just a fighting game, but you have miniatures and they have character names. And, you know, I would get so upset when a character I loved would get brutally shot in the back because, you know, it is this weird thing where it's just cardboard, but you are being the character, right? And that lived experience, it's like video games, that you have a closer bond by just being them in this weird way.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, I know, because you feel it. It's tactile. You're holding it. You're there. You're connected. I mean, I make the joke, but even the Monopoly one, I played it with an old friend of mine I worked with at the radio station. She worked the night shift, and I was the morning show host, and I would show up every night, 5 days a week, with Star Wars Monopoly in 1997. And we would just play the game and have a lot of fun. And it just felt, and at the time, it just felt like you were rolling around this galaxy that you knew and loved, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and just, spending time with the details too, right? Like, I'm sure just that you're really spending time with the specific ships, the specific planets, all that stuff just deepens the love. So I think that's great for you, Andrew, and I'm sure we would both like to be able to pursue it more than we have.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on that one, Ken?
No, I mean, it does look, I'm looking at it right now. There's an add to cart button, but maybe not. Maybe next year.
Once we get the client action figures.
Yes.
So we got to keep our priorities straight. All right. Great question, Andrew. We'll move on to our final question from James Puckett. James says, my question is a two-parter. One, for Ken, how excited are you for the unseen footage from the new Get Back Beatles documentary? And two, for everybody. What is your favorite Star Wars documentary? I got to go with the Phil Tippett Return of the Jedi Creatures documentary, with the beginning being a very close second. Ken, let's address the Beatles first in this great two-parter documentary question.
Yeah.
Are you excited for that documentary? Right?
Yes, I am. And James is a relatively new supporter of us over on Patreon. I saw his name pop up there in the Discord. Welcome, James, to the party. And yeah, as a lifelong Beatle nut, I am really excited. And I know Peter Jackson is a Beatle fan too. But one of the things, I'll tell you what, you talk about themes, you talk about Book of Boba Fett. I can kind of connect it to that. The Get Back Beatles documentary is all around the recording of that album. Get Back was what they eventually called it. Let It Be kind of was what the thought was. And it is one of the famous, the Beatles are all fighting and Yoko's breaking up the band and all those kind of things that become these narratives that kind of poured out of the history books, the pop culture history books in the 60s, 70s, 80s and beyond. But that's not all necessarily true. And it's definitely not fair to Yoko. And it's definitely not fair to the Beatles at that time, who actually were getting along at times and had some great moments. It just was a weird situation. I'm looking forward to this documentary kind of going, here's your nostalgia, but we're going to kind of give it a new identity and tell you a little bit of a different narrative. I think that some of the things I've even heard about, and even Peter Jackson talking about what brought him to the project, other than just, hey, he's a Beatles fan. Because it's famous for George and Paul arguing and George saying, I'll do whatever you want me. I'll play what you want me to do. I'll play whatever you want me to play, Paul. And they fighting. But that was just the highlights. And often, as you and I know, the highlights can become the full story. And that's not necessarily the case. So keeping with our Star Wars themes, I'm looking to retheme the Get Back sessions.
That is great. I'm very excited for you. I'm not as knowledgeable of a fan as you, Ken, and I've drifted away a little bit. But man, yeah, Beatles were huge for me when I was young. I had the White Album on repeat, which took a lot of work because it was, two vinyl records.
Yeah.
Four sides. So to listen to White Album on repeat took physical labor. Huge Beatles period. Had John Lennon glasses, all that kind of stuff. So I'm really excited to kind of, from my different perspective, because as a kid, and a teen, and a young adult, that was a real different perspective. And they were like my dad's band that I suddenly connected with. And that was a connection. But now that I'm older, kind of looking back at them as, where were they at as creators in this difficult time? Or maybe not difficult time, as you're saying. I'm really fascinated. I also actually did, for a concert, play Get Back with my band when I was a drummer. So I want to watch Ringo put that drum part together and see how badly I got it wrong.
That's amazing. I want the documentary of the day Guns N' Roses blew the Beatles out of your CD player. That's my one.
They coexisted for quite a while.
As they should.
Yeah.
Love it.
Anyway, moving on from that, we could, of course, do Beatle Center, and maybe we will someday. Ken will take the lead on that. But let's talk the second part of James' question about just the power of documentaries. You did a great job tying that to Star Wars. What is your favorite Star Wars documentary and why?
Oh, man, he meant like the Phil Tippett stuff and all that. Like some of the 80s things are still just, we've talked about those of just, I can remember the lines as a kid. I love that it brings up the beginning. I'm a big fan of Empire of Dreams, which is a Lucasfilm commission type of doc, which can sometimes, I don't know, maybe fudge some of the details and cover up some of the bruises. And that's fine and fair. But I think I love that doc. Empire of Dreams is a fun. Let me just put it on while I'm doing some work now. And I get into it. I get into the story. That said, the beginning and the director and the Jedi are right there neck and neck. And that Rise of Skywalker tie-in one was really good too.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the beginning that, especially if you track my relationship to the prequels, and often you can look at a doc and, you could take what you want out of it. And as a prequel fan, I remember looking at a lot of that documentary early on and pointing to points of potential mistake from George, right? Like, he cast this guy. He could have cast this kid and he was doing this and he could have done that. And you could go that way. And some of that stuff is there. But now when I look back watching it, particularly around the stuff, I don't want to beat around the bush here, around the Jake Lloyd stuff, because in the documentary, there's clips of George kind of saying, you might save time because the other kid might hit his marks a little better. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but just there's something about this kid I like. And now when I look at the beginning, I see it as a testament to George going, I've got a story to tell. I want my story out there. This is what I want to do. And I'm trying to reach a new generation. And mistakes and all, or weird decisions and all, Rick McCallum chomping gum and all, I see it differently now as my relationship with the prequels has changed. And that's why I just kind of love the beginning. It's such an interesting watch even now. And because it has no narration, there's no, you know, on day one, it's the story and you're just kind of observing it. And I take a lot from it.
Yeah, no, I haven't watched it in a long time, and you're getting me super pumped to rewatch it. I saw just a bit of clips on a Twitter feed discussing something in particular, but it had the infamous, it's like poetry, right? Which is just such a lightning rod. And I really want to go and rewatch that again and just really watch it with the perspective that I really started to have in 2014 of like, stop trying to rewrite the prequels in your mind and understand them from the perspective of a million creative people worked on this, but George Lucas had this story he wanted to tell. Mm-hmm. Why did he want to tell it? What does it mean to him? That's where all the humanity is going to flow from, and just watch it from that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. It's worth a revisit.
Yeah. I think for me, the director in The Jedi is great, really powerful. The Rise of Skywalker one really hit me. Its official title, I believe, is A Skywalker Legacy. Mm. I think particular since, you know, there's a lot of strong opinions about that film and is always totally respected if anybody watches it and just says, this doesn't work for me. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there couldn't be such negativity, not just about, hey, the film didn't turn out, but guesses and opinions about the intentions of the creators, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of saying this was lazy, or they bent to this group, or that kind of thing. And, you know, those are people's opinions, and you can have your opinions. But for me, it's just a little bit of a balm to watch this documentary where you see, I don't see anybody who is being cowardly or lazy or trying to appease anyone. I just see a bunch of really passionate artists working incredibly hard to create something that they believe in. And I think because of the kind of mood around the Rise of Skywalker, I really got a lot out of the Skywalker Legacy. It was really moving to see all these artists like just being like, hey, totally fine if you didn't like the product that they made, but look at the passion and the love and the work that they put into this product.
Yeah, the scale of it was so huge, and the love and the passion was there on every little level, even some of the decisions, and maybe they made the incorrect decisions in your mind, but they made them. And I always think that's important. And that goes back to even George. He made them. He made decisions. He wasn't just floating through this, and neither were they. I think that's a great answer.
Yeah. And then I will second yours. I think my number one documentary is Empire of Dreams, right? Mm-hmm. Because I understand there's probably some things that maybe some other people in the process disagree with how they're spun, but there's a lot. Lucas made that. And he called it Empire of Dreams, right? And he has stuff in there from Harrison Ford going, you can't write this stuff. You can write it, but you can't say it, right? Like, there's a lot of critical stuff, right? This isn't like to me, it isn't Lucas just going like, look at all the great things I did. Like, here are all the bumps. Here's the times that there was conflict and people disagreed with me. And it's got that extremely strange and fascinatingly tortured. It represented in the title of like, I wanted to be an indie filmmaker. So in order to do that, I built an empire. And he's putting out this documentary right around when Revenge of the Sith is going to come out, right? Right around when Obi-Wan is going to say to Anakin, you became the very thing that you were meant to destroy. Yeah. And Lucas is kind of saying that about himself of like, I'm distrustful of huge organizations. And in order to fulfill my little indie vision, I built one. I named my documentary Empire of Dreams. I didn't it didn't title it, you know, Victory of Independent Rebellion. I called it Empire of Dreams. And that ultimately makes it fascinating because it's an insight into like, why is Lucas saying that about himself?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard not to answer that one for me, too. Only because Irving Kirshner says smooching, which is just the best. I couldn't have a lot of smooching in the film. Just my favorite.
Yeah. So great answers. And sorry, I'm not going to record anymore, Ken. I got to go watch the beginning.
Yeah, you should. And I might watch Empire of Dreams tonight on the treadmill. Like it's the way it works.
Sounds good. Well, those are our questions. Thank you, James. Thank you, Andrew, Michael, and Kyler.
Yes, thank you all. And hey, if you want to find us, some of you might be listening for the first time. Some of you might be listening to us for the first time in a while because of the Book of Boba Fett trailer might bring you in. Hey, welcome. Glad to have you around here. You can follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available on a lot of different spots, including the classics like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, but also Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Now's the time to get that Speculate Responsibly t-shirt so you can remind yourself when you look in the mirror. You can support us directly like James Puckett just did recently by going to patreon.com/ForceCenter. Always love having new patrons from there. You get access to the Discord server where we have a daily and weekly conversation about Star Wars. We do this thing. I put up a character of the week. We discuss it. I couldn't do it this week because Boba Fett got in the way of that. So I'll get a character of the week up here. You can follow me at Ken Napzok or go to kennapzok.com for more information on all the things I do. Joseph and I love to highlight things with things in the real world that we want you to maybe pay attention to or shine a light on. I've been focusing on Be the Match a lot lately. That's the National Bone Marrow Donor Program, something I'm involved in. Go to bethematch.org for more information on how you can become a bone marrow donor. Joseph, what do you got?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures. For my other podcast, Obsessed, our most recent episode is a big discussion about Dune Part 1, so check that out if you're interested. And for the thing that I'd like to give a shout out to, I want to continue to support ResistBot. It is a service that lets you very, very quickly and very easily reach your representatives at all different governmental levels. So if you have a strong opinion about something that is happening or something you feel should happen, it is a great way to reach out and have your voice heard.
It is indeed. All right, that's it for this week. So for Boba Fett, Fennec Shand, and that handful of money in a mask, we'll see you next time. This was Force Center.